once more into the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, June 4th, 2016. And although it is debatable whether or not it's exciting for you, it's exciting for us because, as I've said before, it gives us a grand opportunity to really screw things up and say things we could avoid, wish we could have not said for the last. You know, it's just the opposite of Lynn Woolley and Donald Trump.
Right. You can just say what you want.
Lynn tries to say shocking, absurd things, and so does Donald Trump. Now, admittedly, they don't agree with each other on much of anything. But the whole issue is to say shocking and absurd things so people will tune in. And
that's
here
how
we
you
are.
Get ratings, right? Except we don't do that, and we still have ratings.
I don't know if we have ratings. We used to have ratings. Maybe we don't anymore. I think
sometimes
everybody
we don't
fell
have ratings,
asleep
I think,
who was
yeah.
doing that. Anyway, the telephone number to call in here, it used to be numbers back when we had an 866 number.
I just had an idea. Go ahead and give the numbers.
Okay, it's 254-773-1400. And we'd love to have you call and ask us some questions about something substantial so that we can get sort of focused here. It's a rainy day, and very frankly, reading through the economic news is even getting boring for me at this point.
Right.
It's that time of year.
It's that time of year. It's because there's not a big news. So basically, we wrapped up last hour by me talking about how I'm really optimistic about productivity growth into the future.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that we've seen the kind of productivity growth that we're about to see since the early 1900s
mm-hmm.
in agriculture, when the tractor came out and people weren't wandering through the bushes doing things. Because in farming...
Wandering through the bushes?
Yes, if they were mulberry bushes.
Oh,
you could
oh,
wander
oh,
through them. Wander around them, even
so,
if you go by the sign.
Tractors now harvest mulberries?
There are machines that are harvesting mulberries.
Oh, okay.
And
right.
there are machines that are getting smarter and smarter that are harvesting olives and harvesting almonds and harvesting berries and harvesting lots of things that needed human hands involved before that don't require human hands. So we're seeing the innovation in agriculture. We're seeing it in industry. We're going to be seeing it in a lot of other areas. And this is the same nervous kind of happiness, but also a little bit scared feeling that people had in the early 1900s about losing their job in agriculture. Well, what are we going to do now? What's the next thing? What is it that we'll do? And some of them turned and said, okay, we're going to start working in the industry that's making the tractors or making the automobiles. And I think that's still the place to turn today. If you look at the industry that's making 3D printers or the industry that's making drones or the industry that are making these new technologies, that's the future. And training for that future is going to be a good bet at this point. Or training for the old industries of trying to figure out how to use a milling machine by hand, it might be good knowledge for when you're teaching a machine how to do it, but it's not a job that you should expect a career out of unless it's in a niche market for wealthy people that want handmade items that people were involved in making.
Every once in a while, something comes along in the news that is really surprising to me and really gets my attention, and something happened this week. It's in the Wall Street Journal. You may be able to find it elsewhere if you're not a subscriber to the Wall Street Journal. But there's a robot named Sophia, sort of Sophia. Is a Hong Kong company that makes the robot. And Wall Street Journal reporters were interviewing...
CNBC has a study on it, too. She actually
Sophia?
Appeared at South by Southwest. So she was in Austin, not that long.
She was
ago.
In Austin?
Yes.
At any rate, the journalists were interviewing the robot. There was no programmer in the room. There was no... And this is strictly running off the robot. And there's something called the Turing test.
Yeah.
True intelligence occurs when, according to...
Artificial intelligence, according to Turing...
What was his first name? Donald Turing?
Alan, I think.
Alan Turing. He suggested that if you were speaking to an artificial intelligence and were unaware in the conversation that this was an artificial intelligence and you thought it was a human, then that would mean that there was really an artificial intelligence, a software artificial intelligence. Now, Sophia is what I call hawking. Her language, her ability to speak is...
computerized.
It is slightly computerized. Digitized. And I think they probably did that on purpose to keep her from sounding too real, because I'm quite confident they could make her voice ever so much more realistic. But the point is, in this interview with the Wall Street Journal reporters, I quickly forgot that they were speaking to a robot. She has very good expressions on her face that mimic human emotions. And this is not IBM that did this. We're not talking about Watson. We're not talking about gigantic companies. We're talking about a little company called, I think, Hanson, out of Hong Kong. The point I wanted to make is that the innovations that are right around the corner, that are already in process, the equivalent of Henry Ford making his first car is what we're seeing here, or the Wright brothers taking off and flying an aircraft. You combine this level of ability to express that a private company has put together, not a government, with the new car technology and driverless technology that's coming along. And I would say that 10 years from now, we will look back and the innovations and growth in technological issues, I don't know what else to call them, in the country, and the wealth created and destroyed as a result of that are going to be absolutely astonishing. And the United States is, I know this company's in Hong Kong, but it's the guy who they were interviewing, who is the head of the company, who did the programming, is obviously an American. And he's chosen to operate in Hong Kong for some reason, I don't know. But the point I wanted to make is that we feel like things are not as good as they used to be, and they're going downhill, and there's a sense of gloom and doom in the country today.
I can tell you that sense has been around, the sense that the good old days were our childhood. That's been around forever.
But it seems to be very intense right now.
Yes.
Because there's nobody other than, I guess, us, and we're not exactly the highest followed group of people in the world, that are saying, hey, the best times are right around the corner. All we have to do is not blow the place up. And it is hard to get our minds around that. It's hard to have the patience to wait just a little longer. It's hard to do the equivalent of, and I'm not suggesting you do this, by the way, invest in Apple when it's going bankrupt. It's hard to do these things. It's hard to hang in there. But I just want to encourage you, don't jump ship in this time of negativity.
Right. And the reality
be
is
be patient
that,
a little longer.
As I said last hour, the number of new startups is at an absolute record right now. It's slowed down. The growth in new startups has slowed down. Well, that's because unemployment is dropping. People are getting jobs instead of being tinkerers in the garage. But that innovation, the periods in history that we have economic slowdowns or even collapses that lead to innovation, that's what drives the next big boom. It was the recession in the 70s that led to Microsoft and to Apple. And it led to something that's driven productivity up to now. Now we're taking another step in getting into automation of everything, of cars, of manufacturing, of cooking, of basically you name it. At some point, it's going to be automation of nursing, automation of doctors, automation of stockbrokers, automation of everything, which leaves us at the point of designing the next thing that we want to automate. And that's what humans will be good at. And there's another piece to this that's going to bring the prices down on food and on clothing and on all of our technology. So looking ahead, you know, there was this rosy future that was prophesied in Star Trek. Those Trekkies out there know what I'm talking about. Nobody, you know, there's not really money, just everybody has stuff. They eat things, they're well clothed, they're well educated, they're motivated to go out and explore the galaxy. We're getting closer to that. And if you look at where we are today, there was just a recent survey that was done by the UN about poverty. And usually when the UN does a survey about poverty, I start to roll my eyes and go, oh boy, what political motivation do they have this time? But this is a long-term survey, and long-term surveys don't tend to be politically anything because no politician's going to quote them. Economists might. 100 years ago, the vast majority of the world would be what we would consider horrible poverty today. That number, the number of places in the world where there is horrible poverty, where there's famine and disease and an inability to fix it at all, has dropped to about 20% of the population of the planet. When 100 years ago, it was 90% of the population of the planet. That means we're moving forward with some things, and there's a lot of upheaval that comes with that. If you look at the chaos that's happening in Africa and Eastern Europe and in the Middle East, it's because we have a lot more people there than there used to be. If you look at Saudi Arabia, it's a big desert. It used to support a population that was pretty tiny. But they had a boom in both the liquid that we use to create energy, and also food was available for a lot cheaper because we used that liquid that they gave us to ship some food back to them.
We also used it to fertilize the food that we grew.
Right. So we used it in agriculture. There's the boom that came out of the industrial revolution is going to be bigger. The boom that we're about to have is going to be bigger than the industrial revolution. It's going to allow people to exist without jobs, and that's not a good thing all the time. If you look at the reason why you have...
Wait a minute. In some cases, that is a good thing.
It is a good thing in some cases. In some cases, it's a horrible thing. If you look at the radicalized terrorists...
I want to run that just a little bit, though.
Okay, go ahead.
This is the point. Jake was saying 100 years ago, the amount of the world in poverty. 100 years ago, the concept of retiring was unknown.
Even in the United States.
And I want to emphasize, not just unknown among regular people, it was unknown. You were either independently wealthy while you were young,
or
in
you
which
weren't.
Case you didn't have to work,
right?
Or you never got there because as you got older, it got worse. The concept of retirement actually started, and again, this is to go back on what Jake was saying a little earlier, actually started with the Great Depression. In the Great Depression, one of the reasons that Social Security was instituted wasn't just to take care of old people and stop them from starving to death. That's really nice.
That was a big reason.
It was to give people an incentive at a certain age to quit work so that younger people could come in and get hired.
Right.
And it worked, and it's still working. You know, when all those people left the workforce.
What you're saying is them not working is still working?
It is. It's working
that's
in the economy.
That's a little weird.
It is.
Yeah,
not working.
Well, not working is working
but
now.
That's my argument. Not working works.
Right.
And the point is that I've heard a lot of people make that argument that you had maybe, and you just didn't make the whole argument. You were just simply saying that may not be a good thing.
There are times and places when it's not a good thing.
Significant numbers of people not having to work and getting paid. And one of the things, for example, if you remember, Mitt Romney was complaining about all the people who worked and who got government checks.
Right.
And didn't pay taxes,
right.
And who got paid every month by the government.
By the way, that's not the type of not work that I'm talking about.
Well, but this kind of not work, included in his statistics that he was using in that secretly taped interview.
Right.
Were all the Social Security recipients.
Yes.
Who were not working. They don't work.
No.
Many of them
retired.
Many of them don't work.
But you wouldn't consider that.
Well, no, wait a minute. The Social Security, receiving Social Security and not work and being retired don't necessarily go together.
You're right.
The point is, I get Social Security, but I'm not retired. The point I wanted to make is one of the reasons we didn't have a depression during the Great Recession, by itself, it stopped. You know, there are several things that stopped it from becoming a depression. Mm-hmm. But one of the key elements in stopping it from becoming a depression was Social Security in that.
People
just as we
kept
saw,
getting paid.
We just saw about 500,000 people last month leave the workforce and said, I'm not going to look for work anymore. And you stated it's because they can get paid without working.
Right.
And
because they're retiring.
As a result, we have this problem right now in that we have we have so many jobs that people at a certain level of skill can do, and we actually had more people looking for those jobs than there were jobs available. The fact that 500,000 people left means that young people can get to work.
Which is what we saw in wage growth.
Yes.
We saw wages go up at the same time that people were leaving work. That doesn't generally happen in a supply-demand type situation if that's the whole picture. If people are leaving a job, it means that there's more money to go around, but it means that you can hire new people for less money.
Now, if I can run this off in another direction.
Please do.
For just a second. There's a couple of things, and I mentioned this in the newsletter we just published yesterday. There's two weak numbers in the economy right now that are really...
And by weak, you mean W-E-A-K,
right.
Not like a two-week period.
Right.
It's 2 week, T-O-O-W-E-A-K.
There are two numbers that are slowing things down in the economy and keeping the economy from moving forward and also holding back the stock market. One of them is a reduction in business long-term investment, business investment in durable goods.
Right.
Now this is interesting because the consumers... Durable goods purchases are jumping upward, but businesses are not making long-term investments right now. Now, also, we saw this tremendous drop this last week to 38,000 instead of there being 300,000 or 200,000 people, new net hires, there were 38,000. One of the big things, I think, that a lot of people don't understand, and as an employer, we do understand, when you hire somebody, they generally don't know how to do what you hired them to do, so you have to train them. It is a long-term investment.
This isn't true on the low pay scale. It's not true if you are handed a shovel and told to go fill in a pothole.
But generally speaking.
Yeah, it is true when you consider that you're given a machine and it's told to go fill in a pothole.
Yeah, that's the point. We don't have humans filling in potholes very often.
Right.
We mostly have machines. The machines are hard to operate and they require...
knowledge.
It takes often a year for somebody to come up to speed in a business today. So, and then they become more and more valuable as they go forward because they learn more and more. And the point is, right now, businesses in the United States, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence, and the numbers are backing this up, are very hesitant to make long-term investments. Why? I think I could summarize it down to a lesser extent. It's Bernie Sanders, but I think he's largely written off at this point. The big fear is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has advocated some policies that, whether you like them or not, would be devastating for the profitability of anybody's business. And when you make an investment, a long-term investment in business, you're depending upon a stable tax environment and a stable economic environment to determine the profitability of that long-term investment. And if you see a lot of evidence of instability, and Donald Trump, for all of his
business growth,
all of his pluses and minuses, stability is not high on his list, okay?
Right.
Businesses don't like to invest in a period of potential instability. And
so,
that's slowing the economy down, and it will stay slow until we pick a president.
And I'm going to take a step back again and go bigger picture, longer term again, because we were talking about technologies that are being developed today but aren't going to be on the market today. They're not going to be in the market this year or even next year. When I look at the repercussions of these new technologies, we're going to have instability in places, big instability. What we're seeing in the Middle East right now, in Syria, in Iraq, in Iran, in Pakistan and Turkey, in Lebanon, all of the instability that's moving around there, riots, democratic movements, whatever you want to call them, are based on some very simple facts. And those facts are that oil is a lot less expensive than it used to be, so the governments are not able to keep their populations as happy as they were with handouts. And there are spikes in food prices that have nothing to do with the spikes or drops in oil prices, which causes people to be really upset in the Middle East and in Africa. Any place where you're living off of somebody else's generosity hand to mouth.
And don't forget the fact that there's Twitter.
And Twitter.
Very destabilizing force in that everybody can quickly share their complaints and build on them.
Complain completely, and you get a feedback loop where everybody's complaining about the same thing, and it leads to everybody showing up outside and running around in the streets and doing things like breaking windows and setting things on fire.
And Donald Trump loves to tweet.
Right. Well, that's not, you know, this is, tweeting is something that's, it's simply a part of our reality, and it's going to be replaced by something else,
so it's,
probably in just a few years.
It's ubiquitous tweeting.
Right. It's ubiquitous. The idea...
I have to use a big word here.
That the destabilization of cultures that aren't all that interested in innovation. And I realize that I'm saying things like an economist now. I'm using big words. Let me step back. In places where you're not given a reward for coming up with a new idea, you're instead given rewards for being quiet and not doing anything disruptive. If you do something disruptive, you're yanked and stuck in a prison somewhere for the rest of your life.
Russia,
the Middle East, you can just, even our friends in the Middle East do this. If you
off with his head.
Right. If you look at those cultures, new technology is bad. New technology means that you get to have a bigger population, but they're bored. And what we see in Africa, in the Middle East, and in Eastern Europe is when you have a culture that's not wrapped around innovation, that's not wrapped around being rewarded for making things better, you have a lot of instability, and we need to be prepared for more of that in the future. At the same time that our lives are going to get more comfortable and we're going to be able to innovate more. So the good side of that is we're going to be a lot more comfortable. Our future looks really good. We're going to have productivity and wealth gains that we haven't seen in the history of the world. But there's going to be portions of the world that are knocked into chaos over it. And we just have to take that as fact and prepare for it, because that chaos can come here. And if we don't defend about it, if we don't use the new technology to defend ourselves now, then it's going to be too late later.
Speaking of world knocked into chaos, to follow on with what you were saying.
Right.
Several governors of the Federal Reserve who have voting status in the upcoming vote in June as to whether or not to raise rates have made significant statements. Janet Yellen's going to speak on Monday. She'll probably say it too. They'll probably put off any interest rate increase until after the Brexit vote. And if you don't know what the Brexit vote is...
It's not a new name for brunch.
Right. It is a really dumb move by a politician in Great Britain to get elected, to ultimately become prime minister. He promised a referendum on whether or not to leave the European Union. And economists at the Federal Reserve and elsewhere have said if Great Britain leaves the European Union, A, it could set a precedent, and B, it could have immediate economic ramifications that will echo back to the United States, and C, the event will probably be one of those things that causes a sharp but temporary market downturn. And this is coming up in June. We're going to be in and out of pocket in the next few months, so we just want to let you know in advance that there's another little piece of instability. By the way, the polls in Great Britain is 50-50 on whether or not to leave.
Did Poland leave? Are they part of the European Union?
The
polls in Britain are talking about leaving the European Union.
That's subtly different. The polls, actually, Putin said he wanted to take them.
I don't know why he wants them.
He wants to take a poll of, anyway.
Right.
A lot of polls. Anyway, are showing 50-50, but this is one of those really fascinating things. The futures markets, and believe it or not, in the futures markets, they're making bets on whether or not Britain will leave the European Union.
Right. Some people call that the futures market. Other people call that the excuse that New Yorkers have for not going to Las Vegas.
Only this is in Great Britain. They're only giving it a 20% probability. And it's one of those really interesting things. The pollsters are going out there and saying 50-50, but the financial markets are saying, nope, only 20% probability. And it's one of those things where it'll be really interesting to see whether the financial markets, where people are voting with their money, in effect, making a bet,
right,
or the pollsters who call people up and ask them questions, are more accurate in forecasting what people as a group are going to do in June.
There have been some good studies on this, by the way.
If Great Britain votes to leave the European Union, it will be one of those things that you just talked about where go ahead and get used to the fact that there's going to be chaos. The markets are not going to know how to deal with this. Just like the fact that the financial markets are still trying to deal with negative interest rates, and apparently there is about $10 trillion of government, European government securities and Japanese government securities floating around out there right now that have negative interest rate coupons.
That's good for their government.
They promise to pay you back less than you invested in the government security. They promise without fail that they will pay you back less.
Like, this is the perfect voluntary tax system. You don't get better than that. You just say, yeah, I want to pay taxes. I'm going to buy a bond. I'm going to buy a bond from Japan. Here you go. Have my money and take some of it while you're about it.
The economic dislocations that are being caused by that are something we simply have not got any serious experience with.
Right.
And we have never seen a country leave the European Union, particularly one as big economically as Great Britain.
Right.
So we could easily see some market turmoil, and just fair warning.
I think we will
get through this? Yes, we have a free market system, and I think we'll get through it, and all of us will be better off no matter what happens. But just fair warning, things could get a little bumpy in the next couple of months.
Yeah, I don't see the Brexit actually happening. I see the referendum happening, and I think it's going to be voted down the same way the independence for Scotland was voted down. It's just not economically viable. And the studies that I mentioned before, the behavioral economic studies on whether or not to believe opinion polls that people use a phone and they call people and they say, hey, are you a likely voter? First, that question, are you a likely voter? Are you likely to go to the poll? Is far more likely.
Is that in Poland?
Yeah, it might be in Poland.
Okay.
It's far more likely to be answered yes than the reality of the situation.
Actually, they don't ask that question anymore.
How do they get that information?
They phone people who have voted in the primaries.
Right. Okay. So good. Because the study on if you ask people if they're going to vote, they're almost all going to say, yeah, I think I'll do that this time. Have you ever voted before? No. Are you registered to vote? No.
Well, they actually ask this. They actually take voter registration lists.
Right. And those who voted in the primary.
And okay. Those who actually and voted in the last presidential election.
Now, the studies on these polls were done on the original way they were doing, where they basically said, are you likely to vote? And they say, yeah, I'm likely to vote. If you ask them then, have you voted or are you registered to vote? You start to see that people tend to answer things the way they wish they could do something rather than the way they will do something. And the big question at the Brexit, the big question at the California primary for both the Republican and Democratic parties, who's going to show up? It's not how they're going to vote, because we've got opinion polls that say the vast majority of people believe blah, blah, blah. But the vast majority of people aren't the ones that show up and vote. That's the big question. Who's going to be there and what do they believe? And that means that it's the dedicated people, the people that feel strongly enough to go out and actually do the vote, then that's a harder group of people to survey.
Here is where things get really bumpy in this electronic age. The pollsters early in the Republican run concluded that Jeb Bush was going to win.
Yes.
They simply, but then because of the drop in communication costs, the collapse in communication costs that resulted in
Twitter, Facebook, 24-hour news cycle something dramatic and suddenly your words are everywhere.
And the fact that the showman reality TV show star Donald Trump has such a very good sense intuitively of saying what a lot of people are emotionally thinking.
That's his major strength.
Completely blew all of the models away. And the thing about pollsters is they base what they determine on samples based on previous models that were determined from actual behavior that occurred in the past. And during times of communication collapse, cost collapse, which is what we're seeing right now, we can get dramatic changes in human behavior. I don't think anybody would have guessed.
One of our favorite Prize winners is the one that wrote about this.
Nobody did guess that Donald Trump would win the Republican nomination just a few months ago. They all dismissed him.
And this is the first presidential election that I have seen that is, in my mind, truly Democratic.
And the Republicans are more Democratic than the Democrats
are. And this is, let me explain
that a
second.
And the Democrats are more Republican than the Republicans
are. Let me explain that, because there's a lot of Republicans out there that are saying, what did you just say? What does that mean? Okay, let's look at the...
There's only like two that are listening, so it couldn't be a lot of them.
Let's look at the delegates, the way the Democrats and the Republicans are doing their delegates. But before we look at the delegates, let's say, what does republic mean? Republic means representative elected to make decisions. Democrat means the people make the decisions. The people as a whole, with a popular vote, make a decision. That's pure democracy. It's pretty close to socialism. It really is. I mean, when everybody, the people as a group, make a decision, that is both democracy and socialism. The two words are almost synonymous in the old languages they come from. So now you go to republic. Republican means that you elect a representative to make a decision for you. We have a democratic republic where the people as a whole vote for some specific candidates, but as in smaller groups, vote for other candidates. So the Senate is by state, and the Congress, the representative from the House, is going to be by district. All right. The Democrats came to office by saying every vote is important, that we shouldn't depend on the representative as much, that it should be about the popularity of what you're doing. And the Republicans came around by saying, well, the people really don't have time to dig into the nitty-gritty of all of the issues. So we need to hire or elect someone who's going to get into that, that we trust, and is going to be able to come back to us and tell us why they voted the way they did. Now we look at the delegates in the Republican side, and the Republican delegates in the primary have to vote the way their state voted. We don't have super delegates in the Republicans. We have super delegates in the Democrats. The super delegates are people that were elected officials that during their time have been appointed as super delegates, and they make their decision not based on the popular vote. They get to change their decision. They can just say, I'm going to vote for Mickey Mouse.
Do you know when they installed that in the Democratic Party?
Please tell me.
Back in the 70s and early 80s, the Democrats kept putting radicals up for president, left-wing radicals.
Right, and they said,
and the Republicans would just run over them. And they said, whoa, wait a minute.
We're losing.
You know,
we keep losing.
Allowing everybody out there to vote, particularly younger people, to vote their radical opinion is a good way to lose elections.
Or
so what they did
wind
is
up with Bernie Sanders.
And they turned around and looked, and this is interesting. They look at the way the Constitution is written, the compromise in the Constitution. Senators are, A, stay in office a long time, and
Six
B,
years.
Are elected by a very large chunk of the population
right,
compared
with
the representatives.
Right.
So this balance between having people who are more stable and who have longer to think about things.
They don't have to win an election next year just to be in office.
So they said, okay, if you are a congressperson, or have been a congressperson, or are a party high party official elected by the party, and you've worked for the party for years, and you have the long-term interests of the party,
you get to be a superdelegate.
You get to be a superdelegate, and everybody else gets to be picked by the vox populi.
Right.
And as a result, they have a more Republican, more stable method of choosing their candidate than do the Democrats
who do the Republicans.
And this
who espouse that exact method in their platform.
And it's really important to remember that 100 years ago, the two parties had opposite names. The people who are Republicans today were the
Democrats.
Republicans.
Right.
And the people who are Democrats today were the Republican Democrats.
Right. If you think of the party of the minority in the 60s, it was the Republicans. And the party of the majority of the South, for instance, was the Democrats. The, you know, Jim Crow was a Democratic movement. So we've had a complete switch, and that happens regularly, and we may be seeing it happening again. We may be seeing right now with Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump a shift. Because Donald Trump, when you look at his platform, this is something that may offend people, but look at the platform. When he says tariffs on trade, when he says we're going to make coal profitable again and I'm going to get your jobs back, those are socialist comments. Those are comments that the government is going to give you money for doing something that the market has deemed not profitable. That's socialism. And yet that's where the Republicans have been shifting. And a lot of the vote for the Republican, for Donald Trump, for instance, are formerly lifetime Democrats who were in the coal industry or in the Rust Belt or up in Detroit, and they're voting for Trump.
Just like after Lyndon Johnson, a lot of lifetime Democrats became Republicans.
Right.
As a matter of fact, there have been several articles, and I tend to agree with them, that the conservative branch of the Republican Party was killed by Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And I think, by the way, this is what Donald Trump, and people are going to think I'm nuts, but if you actually examine political positions, Donald Trump is to the left of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, just take a step back, because Republicans have been socially conservative and fiscally conservative. One of the strong values in the Republican Party is family values. You know, it's a big, big deal, family values. Trump's been married three times. At any other time in my lifetime, a candidate coming up for the Republican nomination who'd been married three times, they wouldn't even been considered.
And who declared bankruptcy multiple times.
Right. That has changed, and it's just as much changed on the Democrat side. Bernie Sanders' popularity comes from a movement of people that are young and truly don't understand finances at all. They think, I've got a lot of debt from student loans, and I don't like it. And Bernie Sanders is saying that we should have free college. Well, I like that. There's not a lot of depth in that conversation. Well, there's not a lot of depth in a lot of the rhetoric that's going on across the political spectrum today.
Speaking of depth, we have a depth of commercials we need to play.
We must.
And that's what keeps Town Square Media...
Stimulate the economy.
Yes, we don't... Jake and I don't pay for this program. Town Square does, and Town Square sells commercials to do that. And so they obligate us to play them. We don't necessarily support anything, particularly the first commercial that comes up. We do not support that. We object to it, but they've paid to be on the air, and there is such a thing as free speech, as Donald Trump pointed out. We'll be back on the other side of these commercials with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, June 4th, with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And it's the year 2016. And the telephone number in here remains 254-773-1400. You're welcome to give us a call. We got about 10 minutes left in the program on this rainy Saturday. By the way, El Nino has gone neutral on us.
Oh. We've got a neutral El Nino. Were they aggressively neutral?
The ENSO oscillation, which is the hot, cold South Pacific that has a bit of a lag, and then it causes significant weather patterns here in Central Texas.
But this is something to be aware of, that all of those weather patterns are Spanish.
Well, they're all children, too.
Yes.
And they all
exist in Spanish children
that exist in the Pacific Ocean.
There are Spanish children in the South Pacific Ocean that can cause droughts in California and floods in Colorado.
And the same thing in Texas.
Right.
The result is that all of this rain we're getting, according to the climatological forecast from the National Weather Service, where NOAA is, which we need NOAA.
Yeah, no one knows about floods.
It says that sometime this summer things are going to dry up and get dry and more normal during the fall, a little drier than it has been. So those of you who are wondering if the rain is ever going to stop, apparently the National Weather Service has indicated that the source of all the rain, which has been a warm South Pacific is about to moderate. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You are on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen.
Where? Good morning. Gentlemen. I don't know about the gentleman, no, but I'll give you a good morning.
Right. We both work.
Well, the reason you don't get any callers because, like myself, you're so fascinating. I just don't want to interrupt what you're doing. But since you've devolved to talking about the weather, here we go.
Well, that's all a right. big—that's an economic issue.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I have a theory, and it may be from what I've gleaned from you over the years, listening to you. But when it comes to the national debt and government spending, mm-hmm. and its effects on the inflation in a particular country, America, compared to, say, Greece or Argentina, whatnot, their economies are both more small and their currencies are pretty much limited to a more local level. When they print money, it affects their economy.
Not Greece. They can't print their own money. If they could, they wouldn't have a problem.
Yeah, they just print a lot of it.
Well, anyway, because so much of the world trades in dollars, America can print a lot more money and have less of a detrimental effect. In essence, we can. Who knows how much it would take for us to actually negatively affect inflation or, you know, cause inflation by printing. And I'm thinking that's why the government just doesn't care or they're not really worried about the debt.
Well, the only thing that they have to do, and it's an accounting issue, is each year when the government spends money, they actually have to pay the interest to the people who own the Treasury securities.
That, by the way, is in the Constitution.
And
it is one of the things that the government's responsibility is very clearly lined out.
Right.
It says you've got to pay interest and the debt,
and
period.
Over time, particularly if interest rates go back up, and I think they will eventually, what we're going to see is a larger and larger chunk of the tax revenues taken in by the federal government going to pay off what's called debt held by the public. That's the real national debt. Now, a nice thing about a big chunk of that right now, about, I think, 16% of the debt held by the public, the real debt of the United States, is actually held by the Federal Reserve. And if they make, when they get the interest, they just turn around and pay it back to the Treasury. So that works out pretty well, which is, by the way, one of the reasons the Congress would like to have the power to audit the Fed and control the Fed, because they could say, just buy up all the national debt.
Why not?
Let's pay us back all the interest, and that way we don't owe anybody any money, and they have no clue.
That would cause inflation.
What?
That would seriously cause inflation.
Serious problem that would be.
That's been tried in many African nations, and it doesn't work very well.
No, and eventually, very frankly, as the economy picks up, and it will eventually pick up again, we've been talking about the innovations we think are going to cause that. Boy, this is unpopular. The United States of America will need to raise taxes. Not a lot, because if we raise taxes a lot, they'll get less revenue. But right now, we have the lowest tax rate on individuals of any nation in the developed world.
And part of that is because we've got the highest tax rate on corporations of any nation in the developed world.
But corporations, the way our tax code is set up, very, very few corporations pay the full tax rate.
Right.
They pay a fraction of the tax
because
rate.
Because
they figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And it distorts things.
The consumer ultimately pays corporate taxes. Anyway,
right, correct.
Right,
correct. And we pay income taxes. But the point is that if you look at our total tax rate in the United States, compared to, let's just say, anywhere in Europe or Japan or any developed country in the world, you discover that we're paying the lowest taxes. And that's cool, but we get the lowest services from our government in many ways, too. But the point is that we do have, and this is an important thing, it's Keynesianism, but it's still true. And all of the various forms of economics agree on this. When we get good times, such as we did in the late 1990s, cutting taxes is a really bad idea. It's good to run a surplus and pay down the debt for a while so that when bad times come, we have the opportunity to borrow a lot of money and spend a lot of money in the economy to get things going again. The difficulty we get, and we did make this mistake when we elected George W. Bush, and that is we were running a surplus. we were paying down the debt, and he said it's far more efficient, and Congress and the Republicans in Congress agreed with him, it's far more efficient to cut taxes at this point and return it to the people, and they'll spend it and they'll raise revenues. In fact, the reverse happened, but that's beside the point.
There's a key here. In that static environment, that was probably a good idea. If you lower the taxes, though, then you can't increase government spending
right.
at the same time.
And
we went both. We went to war at that point. And that wasn't something anybody, there wasn't a vote that says, do you think we should be attacked? No, but we didn't change our internal tax policy when we started increasing the spending for war.
We did make a decision, and the decision was made both by Congress, which at the time was dominated by Republicans, and by the president, although Democrats voted for this too, and that was to go to war in two countries and put the war off the books so we didn't have to raise taxes to pay for it. Bad idea.
Yeah, and the idea of going to war, I realize a lot of people are now negative about the fact that we went to war in Iraq and Afghanistan, but the reality was that the vast majority, and by vast I mean into the 70%, were behind each of those wars when they started. So let's remember that yes, it's really easy for us to blame the politicians now, but we were behind it back then.
But what's dangerous,
in my opinion, we would have been willing to pay more taxes.
We would have.
But
it's dangerous to go to war without raising taxes because we think we can go to war on the cheap.
Right. You can't do that. That's a way of having a problem that lasts for decades.
And whether or not strategically it was a good idea to invade Iraq and go into and do all of these things is open to debate, and we can all have our opinion on it. But here's my point.
There's no debate about this part.
It was sold as a, we can get in quick and get out, have very minimal, if any, casualties. It won't cost us anything. And we can do this off the books as an emergency and not have to raise taxes to pay for it. If we're going to go to war in the United States, I happen to agree with Hillary Clinton. She's the only person who said this that I've heard say it publicly. If she had it to do over again, she said she would have insisted or tried to insist that we formally declare war on both countries and we get the Congressional Budget Office to say, based on past wars, what's this going to cost?
Right.
And we put a vote in Congress that says we got to raise taxes to pay for it.
And we're about out of time, so we really appreciate the call. Thanks for getting us off the weather.
Thanks, gentlemen.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Now the weather's
back. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if you'd like to contact us off the air, of course, during the weekend, we have a voicemail. But during the week, we have live people answer the phone. You don't get a phone tree. And the telephone number would be 947-1111. Otherwise,
toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, where you can see our ugly mugs and our beautiful staff. You can listen to podcasts to increase the insanity level across the country. You can read our philosophy and our newsletters, and I think it's worthwhile. We put a lot of time in that. So until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Fair, balanced. Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.